Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have another exciting guest. I'm going to welcome him to the show. We're going to talk to him a little bit, and then I'm going to start to ask him some questions. So, hi, Patrick. How are you?
Hi, Nancy. Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Patrick, can you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do, please?
Sure, yes. My name is Patrick Andries, and...
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
I can hardly hear you, but keep talking. Hi, everyone, again. We're back. The little interference going on, but we're back now. So, Patrick, we had kind of like got disconnected when you started to talk a little bit about who you are. So could you please continue?
Sure. I am the executive director of the School of Intuitive Arts and Sciences in Fox River Grove. And what we do is we offer programs that really, at its core, are designed to help people in the evolution and development of their consciousness. And so all of our core curriculum really revolves around that, things like meditation, concentration, visualization, and the basics. And then we even work people up into the more advanced abilities if they really want to take the time to explore that, things like astral projection and clairvoyance, telepathy, intuition, things like that.
Do you think, Patrick, that most people have natural abilities, maybe that they just don't know that they have?
I sure do. Over the years, I've really seen that a lot of people, when they come to us and start taking classes, that after they see what intuition is, they can start kind of piecing the pieces together throughout their life and see where they might have had some of those experiences before and just kind of written them off. I think one of the more common ones that people have is sometimes they'll be thinking about a friend that maybe they haven't seen or talked to in about 10 years, and within a few days of starting to think about them again, maybe they receive a letter or get a phone call or things like that, where physically you just can't see any kind of connection to that. But that when they start to see how intuition works, they realize that's actually their intuition in action.
Do you think it would help people, Patrick, if they would kind of jot down some of the feelings that they might be getting or some of the visions that they may get and kind of date them just to kind of have like a record?
Yes, I do. Actually, that's one of the things that we often will recommend to our students is to keep kind of a general journal, so to speak, where you can record your dreams if you are working on interpreting your dreams. You can also record any particular meditation experiences that you might have, and also any kind of intuitive experiences, so that over time you can see how all of those things really interrelate with each other.
Other than like jotting things down, is there some other like maybe little hints that you can give the listeners to help them bring out their intuitiveness better?
The main thing is to work on getting the conscious mind to become quiet and still. That's really the number one thing that blocks the intuition from coming through, because the intuition is kind of like this still, quiet voice. It comes through as a whisper. And the conscious mind, the part of the mind that we use normally while we're awake, is really noisy and kind of boisterous. And so it remains dominant through a lot of the day. And so whenever we work with our students, one of the foundations that we teach is concentration. And no matter what abilities we are working with our students, we keep coming back to that. How focused can you create your concentration, and how long can you keep your attention where you want it? That's really the key.
Okay. People have a hard time sometimes meditating.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way that they can maybe quiet their mind to do that?
Sure. One of the exercises that we give to students is to pick a point of focus. And in yoga, this would be called a drishti point, where you would focus your attention. This can really be anything. A lot of times in our classes, we'll use a candle flame. You don't even really need to have any props with you. You know, sometimes I like to give students a way to practice things like that without props because, you know, sure enough, you forget to bring your candle and that's an excuse not to practice. So a lot of times I'll just start students out with their breath is when they breathe, just start out focusing on how the breath feels. Really pay attention to how the breath feels as it's coming into the body, as it's leaving the body, and make sure that all of your attention is focused there. If you start thinking about noises that are going on around you, if you start thinking about an itch on your knee, release those because those are all distractions, and bring your attention back each time to the breath. And then when you can really feel the breath, then start listening for the breath. And it isn't even that important if they can hear the breath clearly. The breath will sound like kind of a soft whisper when they hear it, but even if they don't feel like they can hear the breath, then just really the act of listening for it is enough. And so as you feel the breath and listen to the breath and practice that, then you'll start to develop that focus of concentration that we're talking about.
How old do you think a person should be when they first start, like either meditating or learning something about the metaphysical world?
Well, I don't know about shoulds, but I certainly would like to see children starting to learn to meditate. We have a daughter who is coming up on 2 years old, and we haven't started teaching her how to meditate yet because her concentration level is pretty short right now. We're just kind of helping her at this stage stay open to her spirit and really stay open to the love of learning. But it's going to be a really interesting test with us observing her to see where is a really conducive age for kids to start getting into meditation. But I would anticipate that probably around 5 to 7 years old would be a great age. You know, whenever they can hold their focus of attention for a little bit longer periods of time. And with little kids, you know, we'd probably start out with maybe 5 or 10 minutes of meditation. And then as they're teenagers, then maybe you would get up into a half hour, maybe 45 minutes of meditation or something like that. Even for adults, I typically recommend 30 minutes is a really good length of time. But other than that, I don't think there's any age limit in terms of, you know, if somebody, there's no point where somebody gets too old to start learning how to meditate. I've actually worked with students who are even in their 70s and just transformed tremendously during that time from it.
Which I think is like real important because I believe you're never too old either.
Yeah. I never really did buy into that little saying about you can't teach old dogs new tricks. You know,
I
think that no matter how old somebody is, they can still have a completely transformed life. I mean, I look at Haydn when he wrote the Haydn Concerto. He was in his 50s. So I think that people can do tremendous things at any age.
And I agree with that. Now, you believe that there are 4 different dimensions of our being.
Right. The way that we classify the different experiences of consciousness, we usually describe them as the physical level of consciousness, which is the brain, the physical body, all of our physical experiences. Then we also have the emotional level, and that's where we experience things in terms of feelings, you know, fear, anger, joy, love. And then we have the mental level also. This is really where our thoughts begin in terms of their development. So when we talk about the mental level, it isn't necessarily the conscious physical mind only that we're talking about, but it's also where our thoughts are planted in the subconscious mind and begin to manifest in our lives. And then the highest level of consciousness is the spiritual level. And the spiritual level is kind of like our blueprint. So if you imagine the seed of a tree, the whole plan for the tree resides within that seed, and that's like our spirit. So the spirit gives us a lot of guidance in terms of our evolution and development, but it also doesn't dictate exactly how that's going to happen. So if you take 2 identical seeds and you plant them in different parts of the country, they might grow up differently because of the climate changes and things like that. But essentially, both of them started out with the same blueprint. And that's kind of like what each of us experience as individuals is we all have the same basic plan as far as how we're evolving as spiritual beings, but then we make individual choices with that. And that's really why we see, you know, these unique differences among us.
If somebody isn't feeling really well, and they try to do meditations or whatever, are they going to have a hard time maybe staying focused, do you think?
Yes, that does play a part in somebody's ability to stay focused. When your body isn't healthy and well, that will certainly become one additional distraction to you. You know, when your body is in pain, it doesn't make it impossible, but certainly your difficulty level is going to be increasing. Just like when students start out and, you know, they're just beginning the process of learning how to discipline their conscious mind and learning how to meditate, we often recommend that they try to create a very conducive environment to meditation. So you go into a place, you might dim the lighting a little bit, you might make sure that you can go into a place where you can close the door so you don't have a lot of outside noises, or at least you can subdue the outside noises as much as possible. So all of those things really help us in the beginning, because we just aren't as practiced at keeping our mind focused and blocking out all those distractions. But ultimately, when somebody's an experienced meditator, you could even sit down on a busy train with people talking around you with cell phones and working on the computer and having conversations, and you can go into as deep a meditation there as you can anywhere else. And so if somebody isn't feeling well, they certainly, I would recommend for them to still, you know, put forth the effort. You know, don't become discouraged by it. You know, realize it might be a little bit more challenging, but the meditation process is certainly going to help in their healing process as well. So that's going to be a very important key.
When it comes to some of the classes and things that you offer at your school, two things. First of all, can you give us out the name of your school and how they can get in contact with you, and then maybe offer up a little information about the different classes that you guys are offering?
Sure. The name of the school is School of Intuitive Arts and Sciences, and we are in Fox River Grove. People can find us online under that name, just doing a Google search, and our name should come up at the top or very near. Our website, to go directly to the website, is www.intuitiveschool.com, and our phone number is 847-462-8951. Some of the classes that we offer in, we have what's called a foundation series, which includes the classes that we really feel lay the foundation for your growth and development in consciousness. And like I mentioned just a little bit earlier, concentration is one of those classes where we teach people about what the attention is and how to start creating a disciplined mind, how to start creating that focus and concentration for as long as you need it. And then you can start really going into some of the other skills like meditation, which is where you're really opening up a dialogue. It's sort of like an ongoing dialogue between you and your inner mind. So if you think of your waking state as sort of like your outer mind, and that's how we describe it sometimes, then your subconscious mind, where we go when we meditate, or actually when we're asleep also, that would be our inner mind. So meditation becomes that ongoing dialogue. And visualization plays right in there too, which is another class, because visualization is where we actually learn how to create the images that we plant into our subconscious mind, just like planting a seed in a garden. Every thought that we create with our mind, with our consciousness, we can plant that into our inner mind, and that will grow and develop in our life. And that's where we've been hearing a lot about the law of attraction and things like that. And that is all describing the same process. It's just using a little bit different ways of describing it so that we can reach different people, because some people need to hear it different ways. But it's all really about how our thoughts influence our life, and that's the key to visualization. We also have some classes that will teach people the introduction to intuition and some of the intuitive abilities, how to develop that. That's our intuition class. We have a health and wellness class where we teach not only about nutrition, because actually it's kind of surprising, but you know, a lot of people just don't know how to eat a really nutritious diet. And that plays back into what you're describing. If people don't feel well physically, it's going to make things more difficult. So that's why we include some things in terms of proper exercise, like Tai Chi and yoga are two forms of exercise we really recommend because they're incredibly beneficial, but they're also low impact. So you don't wind up with a lot of wear and tear on the body that you're going to be experiencing later in life because you pushed your body really beyond where, you know, the body normally would go. And so, you know, those are really good low-impact exercise. Walking and swimming are also fantastic. Eating organic foods as much as possible. But then also we teach some energetic healing techniques in that and give you some basic techniques that you can use, but then also introduce you to some of the healing techniques that you can go into more and learn more about and really start to use more in our advanced courses. So you can continue really any of these subjects on into the more advanced studies also. And then also we have a class on the spiritual nature of relationships. And so when we talk about relationships, we aren't really just talking about romantic relationships, even though that's, you know, a lot of times people come in to a class like that thinking, oh, you know, this is going to help me understand my boyfriend or my girlfriend better, or my wife, my spouse. But it's also looking at the fact that anybody that you have contact with, you have a relationship with. You have relationships with your coworkers, your family members, your friends. So it's really understanding the deeper aspects of when we are in relationship with somebody, what that really means to the evolution and the growth of our soul. Because the spiritual aspect of what we're working with is really what we're learning during our life, because what we learn during our life is what we get to take with us after we go. Everything else that we amass, the money, the nice car, the nice house, all these things we have to leave behind. So the things that are really most important, and you know, like even in you know, some of the older texts when they talk about you know, saving up your money in heaven rather than on earth, you know, that's actually what they were talking about, is that when you give attention to that spiritual growth, and in this case with the relationships, that really becomes a permanent part of your life. We also have a class on past lives and soul evolution, which gives people an introduction to the idea of an existence beyond just this one lifetime. And it isn't really a prerequisite that people believe in reincarnation, but the thing that I found is that the vast majority of people on the planet do believe that we had some kind of existence before this lifetime. We have some kind of existence after this lifetime, and it seems like the only thing that really is kind of a point of contention is whether or not we come back to this earth again or not. And so that, to me, it really seems like a very minor point. I personally believe in it myself just because of all the experience that I've had over the years. I didn't start out believing in it, but I certainly have seen a lot of validity to the idea of reincarnation. And when I plug that into the framework that I look at life, it really answers a lot of questions that beforehand were unanswered. You know, I had a lot of questions about how things worked and why things happened. And when I looked at it in the context of, you know, this learning cycle where we got to come back and to improve and to learn and to grow before we move on to whatever, you know, the next experience is, things began to make a lot more sense to me. And so that covers most of our classes. Other than that, we also have dream interpretation, which, you know, helps us really understand that inner communication from the subconscious mind as well. And that covers most of our beginning level classes. We do have quite a few elective classes also, but when you complete the first 9 classes, then you're eligible to go into the more advanced study.
About, if somebody wanted to take your classes from start to finish, about how long of time would that be?
Our level 1 series is approximately 9 months, although it might take a little bit longer than that, depending on if somebody wanted to skip a class to if they needed to do something. We have our classes broken up into 4- and 5-week segments. So each subject we cover in a 4- or 5-week span of time. And we did that partially because we wanted to give people flexibility. We realized that people have a lot of family obligations and things going on in their life. So we wanted to create a program that, you know, would be flexible enough that people could participate, but also, you know, give you that continuity also if you wanted that. So it's, you know, it's anywhere from 9 months to a year is usually what I tell people.
Okay. You also do one that is called Intuitive Art Expressions, and it's using color. How important is that to people?
That class is a really interesting class. It's a way of using art as a medium for developing intuition. And we've been looking for ways to really kind of expand the experience of intuition for people. So using artistic classes has been a really great avenue for that. The teacher who teaches that class for us, she started out as a very traditional artist. You know, she painted very realistic paintings, had a beautiful line of Native American art that she did, a series. But then as soon as she had started working with us, she really started tapping into her intuition more, and that started coming out in her artwork. And she discovered that she was really developing a whole new way of expressing intuition that, you know, later became known as intuitive art. And I've actually seen other artists now spring up during that time that have been advertising themselves as intuitive artists. So I think this is kind of a movement in consciousness that's actually occurring within humanity, where certain individuals who are artists and also have that inclination toward using their intuitive abilities are starting to come out and express this. So that class is, I think what is really good about that is that people who maybe don't even really consider themselves artistic can realize that they can tap into their intuition, they can listen to their intuition and follow their guidance and create these amazing pieces of artwork from that. So it's really just giving people, you know, kind of a variety of different ways to experience their intuition. We have some musical programs also, like a drumming circle, and there's a healing sound circle where we use Tibetan singing bowls and chimes and different things like that. And so, again, that's an auditory way to connect with that intuitive energy. So it's really, you know, I'm sure we'll come out with some other programs, too, to expand it in even other ways. But we're always looking for ways to do that, and that intuitive art class has been a great addition to that.
It's really funny because I saw one of Kathleen's paintings. In fact, I've read her before, is how I met her.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I know who
great.
She is. And she was at one of our other friends' house, and she had done this picture for somebody. And I didn't know who the picture was for. And she said, you know, I did this picture for somebody, and I looked at it, and I said, oh, but it's not for you, right? She said, no. And I said, you want me to tell you about that person? She goes, can you? I said, I don't know. Let's see. So what I did is actually look at her picture. I put my hand on it, looked at her picture, and then I just started telling her all the energy that this other person that she had done that picture for, where that person was and everything else, kind of like a reading for that person without even knowing who I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person who was hosting the party, her name is Jane, and they just kind of stood there and staring at me, and I go, what's the matter? They go, do you know who this picture is for? I said, no, not really, but what I've said, does it fit? And Jane looked at me and said, you have no idea, Nancy, how close you are to that person just by looking at the picture.
Oh, wow.
So the pictures work, you know, and color works. And I don't think, you know, people know that the color level of their own capability is actually quite good. People pick certain colors according to mostly how they're feeling at mm-hmm. that given time. And if you just look at the colors that they're choosing, it helps you to understand kind of where that person is at the moment. And if they continue to use that same color, it tells you a lot about that person.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And, yeah, I've seen some of her pictures also, and she had told me about some experiences with creating the artwork for different people. And she's done some photos that were geared toward healing, too, where certain mm-hmm. conditions or things like that, and then the person would focus on that picture for a period of time and describe their experiences. And that what you were talking about with how people pick out their clothing, that's an experience that I describe to my students a lot of times when we're talking about the energy field. Mm-hmm. Because when we talk about the aura or the energy field that emanates around the body, and then we start getting into picking up on the colors that are in that, a lot of times people have difficulty with that in the beginning. Firstly, because they just aren't often brought up with the idea that we even have an energy field. So that's a whole new concept.
Right.
And then we're asking them to, okay, well, we just introduced you to this idea that you even have an energy field. Now tell me what color is there. And so, you know, sometimes it takes them a while to kind of get used to the idea, but one thing I'll often talk to them about is, you know, focus and be aware of why you pick out certain clothing. Because, you know, when you're in the closet and you're looking through your wardrobe and you're saying, no, that doesn't look right, no, that doesn't look, yeah, that's what I'm going to wear today. You know, what is it that goes into that decision? And most people can relate to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's very true.
Yeah, and it's those kind of organic, very basic experiences that I think are great for people to realize. The things like the person on the end of the phone, you know, why are you picking out a certain piece of clothing? All these kinds of things. You had a sense of that person that you just met for the first time, and yet you had this instant sense of who that person is, and if it's somebody that you really want to know, or maybe it's somebody that you know, you don't really want to be around that person. And everybody, it seems like, can relate to some of those experiences. But once you put that in the context of intuition, then they start to see that pattern. And once you see the pattern, you know, that's the doorway right into the intuitive abilities.
Mm-hmm. You also do a class on discovering your life purpose, but you use six different types of analysis. Can you explain a little bit of that, please?
Sure. That's really the specialty of my wife, Catherine. She pulled together six different methods of personality assessment and pulled them all together into one study, which really she found that each of them added a little bit different perspective, a little bit different facet of what was occurring within the personality. So, for example, one of the foundations of that, at least in my view, and I think she uses this a lot, so I think she would probably agree too, but astrology seems to be a really important part of that. And so the influences of the energies at the time that we were born, and also that continuing ongoing influence, I think is a very important part of that. And, you know, I started out with more of a scientific background, so I kind of like to look at the science of it a lot. And so usually when people ask me, well, do you really believe in that astrology stuff? I'm like, well, yeah, you know, it isn't something I started out believing in, but the more that I worked with it, I really would see the validity of it. And when I looked at it scientifically, it makes a lot of sense to me because, you know, what I usually describe to people is the moon has the ability to pull the Earth out of its orbit just slightly so that the orbit around the sun wobbles just a little bit, and that's enough to pull all of the water in the ocean, you know, up so that we experience this tide where the water level rises and sinks according to the cycle of the moon. So if the moon has that much of an influence on the planet, imagine how much influence it has on your tiny little body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we don't notice that a lot of times because we've grown up with that our whole lives. You know, we're integrated into the environment. But the fact is, you know, all those influences are going on. So I really believe that there is a lot of power there, just in the energies of all of those huge bodies moving around. Another one that she draws on a lot is numerology, and that works with the power of numbers. And, again, that goes back to, you know, everything begins with a thought. And so our thoughts create our life, but every time that we speak, you know, there's a thought behind every word, and there's also a number that corresponds to that. So numerology is really bringing that down to a mathematical level and looking at that energy at a mathematical level. So when we look at people's names that they have, that name has an energy. And so you can look at the name, you can look at the birth date, things like that, and look at those aspects. And that, you know, in a way, kind of ties back into astrology, too, ultimately, just like palmistry, where that was something I didn't know early on in my studies, but I came to learn that palmistry actually has a lot of ties in with astrology, and that's one of the other methods that she uses. Then there's some other methods that she's brought in there, too, that may not be quite as familiar to people. There's one that's called iris analysis, and it's not the iridology, even though she is trained in that. The iridology is where you look at the iris for health in terms of what's going on health-wise in the body. But this type of iris analysis is actually a personality typing, and it works in much the same way as the health diagnosis with the iris. But you can tell a lot about the personality traits, just like you can with the palms. And so she brings that into it. And then there's a family birth order type of assessment also, which looks at the general energy of where you fall within your family. So there's a lot of characteristics that even when I was studying psychology and things like that, that there were certain traits that the firstborn child would typically have, and then certain traits that the secondborn child would often have. Like, for example, the firstborn might be more studious, the secondborn might be a little bit more laid back, maybe more artistic or musical, typically. So it kind of plays on some of those basics, but it goes into it much more in depth in terms of if you're the firstborn male or the firstborn female, secondborn male, secondborn female. And so that I found to be very interesting, too, because, of course, I've had all this done on myself and found it to be very accurate. And I've talked to many people that have gone through her study as well. And then the last one is the past life reading, so that when you look at all this in the context of your larger existence, that's where the past life information really comes into, realizing this is just one life out of an entire existence that, as a soul and spirit, that you've been having. So when you put that in context, then you can kind of see how these influences play into a larger whole, that, you know, this isn't all there is for you. This is kind of like one class or maybe one lesson out of your class in this lifetime. So the past life readings that we do, which is one of the intuitive readings we offer, we usually describe that that focuses a lot more on your karma. And, you know, a lot of times if you have karma, that will come up. And in general, your more spiritual lessons in terms of things like, let's say that you have a tendency to kind of back down from speaking the truth that you see because you're afraid of peer pressure or persecution from other people. So maybe that's a recurring tendency that you have, that as soon as people start questioning your beliefs, you know, that you quickly back down. Well, if that's your tendency, your soul and your spirit want you to be able to express yourself, want you to be able to stand up for your beliefs and your convictions. So you're going to continue to draw experiences into your life that will challenge that for you. So you're going to have people drawn into your life that are going to question your beliefs, that are going to possibly even, in a more extreme case, even, you know, persecute you. But all that's going to give you the chance to stand up for yourself. And, you know, ultimately, as you get better at that and you start really, you know, standing up for what you believe in, you know, and not being so concerned about what other people think, then you'll start to see that you don't draw that into your life as much because you're really starting to get a handle on that lesson. So all six of those things really play an important part in understanding your influences that you chose as you're coming into your life and also your ongoing influences around you. And, you know, one thing I always tell people is to keep in mind, you know, this doesn't mean this is all set in stone. These are influences. It's like, you know, taking a leaf that's floating down a river and nudging it over to the left bank. You know, it doesn't mean that all these things are controlling your life because you still have free will. You still have the ability to make choices. But these are influences, kind of like the current of the river, that are kind of having an influence on you. And it's, you know, in my mind, I think that it's better to know about that so that you can make better decisions than not know about it, you know, and just kind of stay in the dark. So that's why I always go for, you know, awareness. That's my choice.
I wrote my autobiography. It's called Raised by Angels. And one of the, well, a few of the chapters in there, they're all related to past lives and reincarnation. And one of the stories in there is totally unbelievable by a normal everyday person, but it's very true because I've lived it. But one of my past lives, all of the people that was in that past life are in this one now. Okay? And it's like, you know, I tried to sort through many, many things, and I've basically done it. but I didn't realize that that's what the whole story was about until I was actually forced to relive that past life, whether I wanted to or not. And it wasn't, you know, I wasn't with somebody who's taking me back to it. It just decided it's going to show you, and this is what you have to work with.
Oh, wow.
And it's strange, and it's weird, and the story sounds really weird, but it's like, you know, and I explain it later on in the book so people understand why I can say that those same people were in that lifetime that are in this lifetime. And this lifetime was a very hard part of it because of that lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
And so it does relate a lot. And people, I think, if they could look at all of that, would understand why some of the things or some of the choices that they have made or didn't make, you know, really make the difference with what they're doing in this lifetime.
Right, right. It's always interesting to me to hear about different people's experiences. I had a family past life reading, too, with the members of my family to see if we had any connection in the past. And, you know, sure enough, we found a lifetime where all of us were there, and we weren't all in the same family before, but we all were, you know, part of the same community. And my understanding is, too, that a lot of times that on the soul level, souls will travel around in groups also, where you may keep coming into life experiences with the same general group of people, just like we kind of hang around with, you know, groups of friends even during our physical life, where your group of friends may change from time to time during your life, but a lot of times there'll be that kind of core group that you stick with for a long period of time. And so I do think, you know, that we have people that come back again and again and again into our life experiences. And some of them, I think, kind of like you were describing, you know, some of the challenges, I think some of them come back because we've already developed that relationship on that spiritual level. So we continue those lessons because it's already, we've got some familiarity there. But some people, I think, that we come back again and again with simply because we have kind of an affinity for, you know, the way they think or their personality, things like that, that we really like.
Yeah.
I love hearing those stories.
Oh, believe me, it's a goodie, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Patrick, do you believe that most people are from Atlantis?
Yes, I would say that most people did experience during that time period. And when I talk about Atlantis, I usually describe it now as a time period rather than focusing so much on the continent itself. And, you know, in the beginning, that was something that I really had a lot of questions about Atlantis and, you know, where that was, because it seems like there's so much conflicting research out there. But then we started doing intuitive research on Atlantis, and not really so much even intentionally, but that when we would do past life readings for individuals, and there was a school where Catherine and I had taught for many years also, where we did a similar kind of intuitive past life reading, and every once in a while, just spontaneously, somebody would come up with a reading where the lifetime that was being related was during the time period of Atlantis. And so whenever that would come up, that was a great opportunity to go just a little bit deeper and to ask some questions to learn more just about that time period, because it seems like there's a lot of questions up in the air still for that. And what we began to piece together is that there were actually two key time periods prior to our current time period, which started probably about 10,000 BC. And, you know, I've never really heard a name for the time period that we're in, but, you know, basically it started about 10,000 BC, which was the end of the Atlantean time period. And it was a time when, as souls, we hadn't really become completely trapped in the physical experience. And so there were a lot more individuals who had the ability to come into the physical world and leave at will. So we could just come in, experience a little bit, and then we could withdraw all of our energy from the physical world and then assimilate what we had learned. And so we could come in and experiment pretty freely. But what happened was that as people would come in and experiment, then I think that we started to become more attached to what was occurring here, and we started to gradually forget that we were spiritual beings and that we were energy beings in the first place, and we began to identify more with these physical bodies that we were using as vehicles to experience in the physical, and less with being this spiritual energetic form that really had free rein to go anywhere that we wanted to. And so I think people became stuck here for a number of different reasons, but then that kind of leads us into the beginning of what we now call the cycle of reincarnation, which is ultimately a cycle where we are learning how to free ourselves from, you know, the entanglements of the physical world and to be those free energy beings again, where we can, continue to experience in the physical world, or we can go on and have new, greater experiences than just being here. Sometimes with my students, I kind of describe it as it's almost like when we were young souls that our teacher came in with something looking sort of like a snow globe, if you can imagine a gigantic snow globe, and explained to us, this is how creation works. And so, boom, you know, the whole universe came into existence, and that's scientifically what we usually call the Big Bang. So we were learning about creation, learning about how the mind can influence energy, and everything was going great. And then right around the time period of the one that came right before Atlantis is called either Mu or Lemuria, and also during the time of Atlantis, the entrapment was continuing. But the souls, as we were coming into the snow globe to investigate, you know, different things that were going on, we would gradually become trapped. And then all of a sudden now we're inside the snow globe looking out and trying to figure out, okay, how do I get back out of this thing now? And so that's what, you know, kind of our perspective now is that, you know, we're on this little tiny planet around, you know, kind of a rural area of the Milky Way galaxy, which is one of billions of galaxies. You know, our sun is one of billions of suns in our galaxy. So, you know, the Earth physically is not that prominent in terms of the universe. And so here we are now looking out at this vast universe thinking, oh my gosh, you know, we're so insignificant. And in reality, we're these great energetic spiritual beings that if we just shifted our perspective back where we could, you know, look back in on this universe, kind of like looking at it like a snow globe, you know, we would to be able to tap into all this fantastic power that we have available to us. So that's what I usually, you know, talk about when we're talking about Atlantis, is that was kind of, you could almost describe it as almost like the fall of the soul, you know, where we became temporarily enmeshed in the physical experience. And then the end of Atlantis was really where that process of souls becoming entrapped ended, which led us to our current history. And so at this point, everybody is just kind of processing through that. I guess you could just consider it sort of like a little minor mistake, you know, on the spiritual level. You know, ultimately, it's not really going to be a big deal. It's just a little hiccup in our whole experience of things. But, you know, in religion, a lot of times they call it original sin, because sin, you know, actually means, it's an archery term that means you missed the mark. You know, so sin originally just meant we're getting off course. You know, we need to correct our course. So that was kind of the original mistake that we made, was getting enmeshed in the physical experience and forgetting that we are these spiritual beings.
Do they really know where Atlantis is located?
I've seen a lot of evidence, and most of this is intuitive because, you know, a lot of the physical evidence I have found so far, at least, seems to be inconclusive. You know, I was talking about it seems like a lot of that seems to be contradictory. But the intuitive evidence that we've been gathering seems to indicate that it's actually in several different places. That
right.
Through a lot of shifting of the plates, and actually scientifically now plate tectonics is a well-known and well-established science. You know, at one time they just could not conceive that these huge land masses moved.
Right.
But now they realize that actually the surface of the Earth is much more pliable than they ever thought. And, of course, you know, if there's major shifting, then that's not necessarily a good thing for the life on the planet at the time. But they've also seen many different periods where there's been tremendous shifts in the climate and different things like that. And yet life continues. You know, life goes beyond all those physical things. So I think it's really in many different places. I think originally you could kind of center it somewhere in what we now call the Atlantic Ocean, but I think part of it is probably, very deep underwater, where the bottom of the ocean is, you know, one area that a lot of scientists, when they're being honest, will tell mm-hmm. you, we just don't know a lot about what's down there, because it's
right.
just, it's challenging for us to get to those depths and to explore it in any thorough way. So there's, a lot of areas down there, I think, that eventually we're going to discover things. But generally in that area, if you look at some of the populations and some of the cultures that carried some of those same beliefs, like if you look at Egypt and also in Central America going down into South America, both of those areas, if there was a continent, if you imagine a continent in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, colonies coming from the or going toward the west, they would end up in Central America, South America, and colonists going to the east would end up, over in Egypt. So I think there's probably a lot of the survivors from that Atlantean time period, they would have, fled to other land areas, and that's what accounts for, some of the pyramids going up in Central and South America, as well as in Egypt and those areas. And there's a lot of similarities that we can see in terms of Atlantean philosophies and teachings appearing in both Egypt and also in a lot of the cultures in Central and South America.
Yeah, in my intuitiveness as a child, they showed me a five-pointed star, and in each point is a part of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, as a child, I didn't know what they were talking about.
Because,
here I am a kid, and I'm getting all this information, and it's like, yeah, okay, well, that looks kind of cool. I wonder what that is. And then as time goes on and I hear people talking about Atlantis, the rise and fall of Atlantis, I'm going, well, I can't remember an Atlantis, but it shows me five different locations. So when people talk about it, I always say, well, do you really know where it's located? Because, I agree with you. I don't believe they do, but I do believe that there is more than one location.
Right, yeah. And that's, I think, what makes it challenging, especially when you're looking for physical evidence. If it's not just in one place, you have to kind of go all over. And our research really agrees with your intuitive perception, too, is that it's kind of scattered in many different areas. The other thing that I think makes it tricky, too, is that our research indicates that there's actually four cycles of Atlantis, where, the whole time period is referred to as Atlantis, but there are actually four different distinct developments in the culture and the civilization of Atlantis, and each one of them had an ending point.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when one period would end, it would end with kind of a cataclysmic change in the earth, and I think over several of those cycles, the continent, which was the physical area where the Atlanteans had their experiences, would get smaller and smaller. So it didn't all just end at one time, but it got smaller and smaller as different things would happen, and then the final collapse of the Atlantean time period happened, if we were going to put a time period, approximately 10,000 to 12,000 BC or something mm-hmm. in that area. The other thing that's kind of tricky when we do that intuitive research is that time actually isn't measured the same during the Atlantean time period as it is today, which
not
makes
at all.
It very challenging. And so a lot of times when we try to put a time period on it, it was a much more spiritually focused energy. So it wasn't just looking at how many times the Earth was orbiting around the Sun, which is pretty much how we measure time now. Everything is very much a progression of events. So when we talk about the span of Atlantis being 100,000 years, well, you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt because, what is 100,000 years by how we would measure it now? It's this kind of, vague concept of time because it isn't quite measured the same. So it could even be, physically what we would describe as a million years or something like that. But we usually try to describe it at least as close as possible that it occurred about 100,000 year span, and that within that 100,000 year span, understand there were four distinct cycles of the Atlantean time period.
That's kind of interesting. Patrick, can you give out your information for people to get a hold of you again, please?
Sure. It's the School of Intuitive Arts and Sciences, and our website is www.intuitiveschool.com, and our phone number is 847-462-8951.
Okay. I have another question for you. During my course of being raised by my angels, as I call them, it showed me many, many things. It showed me how there's going to be a lot of changes going on the Earth's surface and with people and everything else, and they're not really that pleasant.
Yeah.
Now, everybody's talking about 2012, but they started showing me 2010. So, to me, the time frame is probably speeded up more than what we may think it has for whatever reason. So, in your intuitive studies, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but do you believe that a lot of the land surface as we know it is about to be changed during this next course of changes?
You know, that's a really good question, and I think I probably am going to be talking out more about that in the next few years because intuitively I've been drawn more in that direction. But I had a very interesting experience about 4 or 5 years ago where I was in a meditation, and it was a very powerful meditation for me, and then I felt like I received this download, and it occurred in just a few seconds, but I was told as soon as I received it, okay, you need to come out and you need to start writing. And so I came out of my meditation, and I had no idea what was going to come out of this, and I grabbed my journal, and I just started writing, and that 2 or 3 second download ended up kind of being unzipped, if you think about it, like a computer file, into about 10 pages of information. And a lot of what that dealt with was the coming changes. And I think part of that was just to kind of give me a heads up on some of the things that were going to be coming so that, you know, I would be prepared and I would be able to help prepare people through developing programs and things like that. And I actually came up with the same intuition that you are describing, which is that, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on the year 2012, but that actually around the year 2010, we're going to start to see things shifting a lot, that actually these changes aren't going to just happen in one day, but that over that 2-year period, there's going to be a lot of shifting and a lot of changes that are occurring. And as far as which land areas are going to be safe and which land areas are going to have problems, I haven't received any clear messages about that yet. And I think part of that is maybe because a lot of that is still in flux. I think that maybe that there's still, you know, things could change for a lot of different areas of the planet, but the message that I keep receiving over and over and over again is that as long as we align ourselves with the energy of light and, you know, keep our mind focused on love and we keep our mind focused on, you know, we are safe, we are going to be safe, you know, everything is fine, there's no reason to get, you know, upset about any of this. That, again, it's all about intention. So I keep getting the message there's going to be plenty of safe places on the planet, and that as long as people are open to that intuitively, that, you know, people will start to gather in the safe places. But I think we will probably start to see a lot more shifting. We'll probably see an increase in volcanic activity. We might see more things like, you know, the tsunamis and stuff like that. There might be land areas that sink down below sea level and are suddenly inundated with water. We might see land areas that were underwater, you know, rising up out of the water. So I think there are going to be a lot of physical changes, but I think that a lot of that's still in flux. The other thing, too, that I don't hear as much about, but actually when I started doing some research into the Mayan calendar, I found the Mayans talked a lot about this. And, you know, that's where a lot of this 2012 is coming from, is the Mayan calendar comes to an end in the year 2012. And I've heard a couple of different interpretations as far as exactly when, and so there's a little bit of disagreement on exactly where within that year that it comes to an end. But a lot of it is the changes are energetic, too. So even though we're going to see some physical changes, there's a lot of energetic shifting that is occurring, that our evolution is speeding up, or at least that's going to be our perception of it. And so the energy is going to be speeding up. You'll start to see your thoughts manifesting faster. A lot of people are going to be opening up through their intuitive abilities that maybe really never experienced anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, I think the veil that separates our conscious waking experiences from those intuitive inner subconscious experiences, I think the veil is going to become very thin. A lot of people are going to be able to connect to that inner spirit a lot easier, which we just usually describe that as the superconscious mind also, is another way of describing it. And so people who haven't had exposure to these kinds of things before, they're going to start to have these experiences that they just aren't going to be able to deny. You know, a lot of times I describe it as kind of like, you know, people ask me, well, you know, how did you start believing all this? Well, I didn't really start out believing this stuff necessarily as a child. I was open. I had an open mind. And the thing that really has been driving me all this time is I've always been curious about, you know, if scientists were saying we only use somewhere between 2 to 10% of our mind's abilities, I was always asking, well, what's in that other 90%?
I ask that all the time.
Why can we, you know, why isn't anybody asking what's going on there?
Yeah. No,
you know?
I ask that all the time. It's like, well, come on now, let's think about this.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's been my driving force. And, you know, having that curiosity and keeping my mind open has opened me up to this whole world that it's like when you see these things happening every day, it's kind of like seeing the sun rise every day. You know, it gets to a point where every morning you get up and the sun is there, and you just start to have this confidence that, you know, tomorrow it's going to be there. You know, you get used to that. And so eventually intuition just becomes a way of life. You know, it isn't something that's extraordinary anymore. It's just like breathing in and breathing out. And that's, I think, part of the change that we're going to see is that all of these things that we're talking about now are going to be just a regular part of life, and everybody will be, you know, more aware of that and applying that in their life.
Okay, Patrick, our time is almost up, but the
okay.
phone beeps. I'm wondering if there's a person that has a question and if we have time.
Oh, sure.
So is there a person on the line waiting to ask a question? No. Okay. So that beep was to tell us that our time is just about up. And so what I would like to do is thank you, Patrick, for being on the show. You're very, you know, very aware, very much enlightening with a lot of the things you have to say. So one more time, quickly give out how people can get a hold of you.
Sure. Thanks, Nancy. It's School of Intuitive Arts and Sciences, and we are at www.intuitiveschool.com, and our phone number is 847-462-8951.
Great. Patrick, thank you very much for being on the show. It's been
a pleasure
to have
me.
You on. You're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, all the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care now. Bye.